All right, Michael, thanks for joining me here on another episode of St. Louis Family Corruption. Got Michael Volpe, and this is called Judge Jeff the Child Peddler Meddler. I call him that because he will basically just take your cash, figure any way to settle the case, and force you into a settlement. Regardless of, and ignore all the evidence, basically, to kind of give you an idea, Michael, of a little bit about my history with Jeff Meddler. He was a GAL back for us back in 2018. And from that time, he got on the case in April of 18 and went all the way to December of 18. So over 8 months, he racked up almost $17,000. Mm-hmm. So, that's a lot of cash. And I asked him multiple times, I said, "Hey, Jeff, what, I'd like an itemized receipt." And he said that, he doesn't do that and refused. Go ahead.
There was, I don't know if the law passed, but there was a law proposed in the Missouri legislature we required itemize receipts, which is actually interesting because you would think they wouldn't need a law like that. But yeah, these guys love to charge the way you're describing with Meddler. That's pretty common. Yep. They'll charge you and then you ask them for how did you come up with all of this money, and they don't want to tell you because frankly they probably came out of it out of his rear end.
Oh yeah, well here I got a. You know what's funny is I actually have one of my recordings here of him. I bumped into him at CVS because, believe it or not, the scumbag lives down the road from me. But I asked him, I said, "Hey, Jeff, after asking multiple times, let me find that recording here real quick. After asking him multiple times for an itemized receipt, he just would not give it to me. And here's a recording of me at CVS, and I asked him again, and this is the response I got. Hold on. Let's see here. Now, having a little issue here. Okay, so this is CVS.
What's up, neighbor? How you doing, man?
Yeah, how you doing?
Yeah. Hey,
what's new?
Not much, man. You think I can get that invoice?
Someday.
Someday? Okay. I just know where my money went.
So that's what I get. Someday. Someday, maybe I'll get an itemized receipt.
Right.
To, justify $17,000 of the bills.
Right. Look, this guy was court appointed. So for those who don't all understand all the intricacies, you didn't choose him, and he's like hoisted upon you, so coerced, and then he charges you $17,000, and there's all kinds of things that can happen to you if you don't pay that bill. And then when you ask him to prove that the $17,000 was legitimate, he doesn't feel the need to prove it, and that's the itemized bill is how you prove it. They feel entitled, and in a sense they are, because no one chooses them except for the court, and they just feel entitled to as much of your money as possible with no way to show what they did for the money. And look, most of these folks, they destroy your lives. Even if they work for the money, the end result is usually the destruction of people's families, and then they take your money as well. But the recording is interesting, but the attitude, Meddler is certainly not unique with that attitude.
No. I got some other recordings of him too. You'll really see how he is behind closed doors. But before I get into that, another thing about it too is you know, Mettler charged all that money, and the only time I really heard from him was when a bill was due. And there was one time where we went to court, and he hit us with like another $5,000, and we had like 30 days to come up with it. And I say us, between my ex and I. And so an extra $2,500 in 30 days is a lot of money for some people to come up with. The like on the 31st day, he said that if it's not paid in the next 5 days, that he was going to strike my motions. That's the email I got from him.
They can do that. They technically aren't supposed to like mess with your child custody arrangement, though I've seen that as well. They can do contempt of court. I've seen people go to jail, even though, again, you're not supposed to. We certainly aren't supposed to have debtor's prison. But there's a number of things that they can do. And obviously, not paying his bill, he can become biased against you.
Oh, yeah.
There's a million things you can do. Look, even the IRS is a lot more accommodating when you've got a bill with them than this guy is. It takes years for the IRS to really hammer you. They've got the extra fees, but, and they're the IRS. But you don't see them doing this kind of coercion. And they do a lot of coercion, but the stuff that you hear from Mettler, I wish it was an anomaly, but this is very common among these guardian ad litem who feel entitled to the fees that they charge, which are exorbitant, for work that is completely worthless and usually counterproductive.
Right. And you and I both know of a mother who got hit really hard by Hamilton. I can't think of his first name.
Robert Hamilton.
Yes.
And look, in that case, it's Caroline Less. He went and got a court order to garnish her wages, and her wages are garnished. So, I don't know exactly how much she owes him, but out of every paycheck, he gets a piece of it for this guy to complain. You know, her daughter has disclosed over 10 times. She'll never disclose again because I disclosed sexual abuse against her father is what I mean, to multiple people, therapist, her mom, obviously the police, you name it, all ignored. And this guy is the latest in a long line of people who've ignored. And before that, she had a guardian ad litem named Elaine Podolsky, who we don't have to use that kind of terminology for Elaine. Now everyone knows who she is. He garnished her wages. So, and that, by the way, is yet another thing that these folks can do. Is go in and get an order to just take a piece of your paycheck.
Right. And the worst part about, well, I mean, there's obviously a lot of bad things about that, but, you know, that was during the time when the pandemic was hitting, and she was in the hospitality industry, so, you know.
The garnishment continues. She was out of work for a while. I think Hamilton came in after the worst of COVID subsided, but he is taking a piece of her wages every paycheck. Some of that goes to him. Think about that. He's the guardian ad litem. How is it in her daughter's best interest that part of her paycheck go to this bureaucrat? Well, of course it's not. Now, how is it in her daughter's, how is it in any of the kids' best interests, including yours, to have these bureaucrats take $17,000? Was he the only? I don't think he was the only bureaucrat who was appointed to your case. It certainly wasn't the case with Caroline. It's certainly not the case with almost any one of these. You have multiple of them. $17,000 I've heard of much more. I did stories out of Miami-Dade where the people are generally really wealthy, and $17,000 is usually the retainer. Jeez. So, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, you know, to get back to Mettler, one thing that was really frustrating with me, too, is, besides the fees, he didn't do anything. Like, I called my son's counselor because the big issue that I've always had with my son in my custody case is, every single time my ex would, you know, meet a new guy, she was moving, and that would always result in a school move. I mean, my son had been moved, had changed schools 4 times by the time he was in 5th grade. I mean, that's just not natural. And
Right. For those who don't know, the way child custody is supposed to work is something like that is supposed to be you. It's a knock against that parent because children need stability. So a move, everything else being equal, is supposed to hurt you. So if she's, she's constantly moving, that in itself makes her less fit. Assuming that everything, again, everything else being equal, which I think in general you could say that about your case, but and even if not, her moving constantly is a sign of a lack of fitness. Military brats move, but they're in the military. But for you to think that, every year and a half, it's okay to change schools and uplift the child, if you think that that's okay, that, it's not necessarily okay, that really questions your fitness. And of course, what was happening in your case, they let her do it. They including Medler. The guardian ad litem, they have all sorts of both direct and indirect power. If the guardian ad litem does not want a parent to move, there's a lot of buttons they can push. They don't necessarily have the power of a court order, but they can guide the judge to the appropriate court order if the guardian ad litem doesn't want that move to happen.
Right.
But in your case, they just let her do it, and then your kids, how many kids do you have?
I just have the one.
Right, and your child is moving constantly as a result. Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is the childhood they give, right?
Where
every year and a half, every 2 years, they've now got to meet new kids, make new friends, their old friends are gone, and there you go.
Right. And, what's interesting is, well, when he was in kindergarten and he was going into first grade, that resulted in the second move. And that's right before Medler got on. And I put that in front of him because my son's counselor, my son had developed kind of this facial tic. And through counseling, my son's counselor found out that it was the school move that he stressed out about. It was so stressful for him to think that he was going to have to leave all of his friends from kindergarten, going in the first grade, going to a totally different school. He physically developed a tic, and I put that in front of Medler, and it was in the counselor's notes, and completely ignored it, and still let my ex have residential custody.
Let's get to, you got a few recordings. Let's get to another recording.
Yeah. Well, let's see here. Here's another thing. Medler always wants to settle the case. Now, I have a recording of him during his interview that when he was in front of the board, when he was running for his current position, which is a circuit attorney or circuit judge. So here's how he sells them. Here, I'll play it real quick.
The people are the most important people. So our customer service is making sure that people feel like they got hurt. They got their day, they got their, whether or not they win or lose, that's not the point. It's they had the opportunity to be heard.
The opportunity to be heard, that they get their day in court. So that's him on one scale, but then I got another recording here. Now here's when I was in negotiations with Jeff, because he was trying to get this thing settled. Because remember, this negotiation recording that you're going to hear, this is when he's running for judge the first time, and you can't make judge if you get your case appealed, you can't have a judge getting their cases appealed. So he was really determined to get my case settled. And here's him really.
It's just something to throw out to try to bring us closer together.
Correct. Mediation is much more premised upon she's here.
So, much more premised upon.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the last thing I wanted to share with you here, and this, let's see here. Okay, so I know for a fact that side deals, we all know it, side deals are made outside of the courtroom. And on December 12th of 2018, I go into the courtroom because that's when we're supposed to have our trial. And all of a sudden, I get in there. Brian Dunlap's in there. And he comes in and he says, well, you know, the judge doesn't want to hear the case, yada, yada, yada. If you, you know, push for it, she's going to award, you know, my ex $30,000 in attorney's fees. And this is also what Jeff Medler wanted. And I thought to myself, and then he comes in, you know, probably about 15, 20 minutes later with the parenting plan that was already put together. Like, you can't put together a parenting plan in 20 minutes. So after the trial, after I got forced into that settlement, I called my son's counselor because she was supposed to be there that day. And I thought, how is it that she was not there, that she knew not to come there? So I called her and asked her, and I recorded that. Here's that recording.
Hello, Karen Wetmore.
Hey, Karen. Nate Chacon, how are you?
I'm fine, Nate.
Hey, I have a quick question for you. When we last talked, or maybe not the last time we talked, but, you know, roughly a month or two ago when we talked, I was just talking to my attorney the other day about this, but you said that back in December, we were subpoenaed.
Back in December what? Hello?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Now I can, but I lost.
Okay. Yeah, I got a bad reception here where I'm at, but when you were subpoenaed for our trial, you said you got a call from someone like the day before that you didn't have to come in. Do you remember who that was?
Sure, I believe it was Candace's attorney.
Candace's attorney. Okay, and she called you the day before trial?
I think someone in her office called me, and I can't remember when they called me, or I called them.
Okay.
But it was...
I mean, it was definitely before the trial day.
Yeah.
Trial time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, you know, at that time, Aaron Zielinski was working for Cordell and Cordell. Now, Aaron Zielinski is not a great attorney, so I don't think she's a good psychic either, but she had enough information to go and call my son's counselor, Karen Wetmore, and tell her not to come in, that there wasn't going to be a trial. Now, as we know, as we both know, Aaron Zielinski and Cordell are both being sued right now.
They are, and I did that story back in, I think it was in July. They did the story on the lawsuit. And it's Joel. Why don't I remember Joel's last name?
Yeah, Joel, and it starts with an F. I can't think of it right now. I got it right somewhere around here. But, we're talking about the same person.
Right. Yes, Aaron's being sued for unethical behavior as well. But hold on. Aaron would have had to have been your attorney. Well, they do, the Cordell and Cordell on occasion do take on women, but it's rare.
Right. So let me tell you what happened. Aaron Zielinski started off representing my ex, and at the time she worked for Susan Hyatt, who we all know who she is,
right.
Also.
Right. Susan Hyatt it's a small world. Susan Hyatt was the attorney for Caroline Less, who we just talked about, her ex-husband. Now another member of Cordell and Cordell is the attorney for her ex-husband, William Halas. So it is a very small world. Joel Fritz is the guy's last name.
Yes, I was just about to say that.
Right, yeah. And you can check it out on my site as well, Michael Volpe Investigates. It's michaelvolpe.substack.com, the article about him. And there's some interesting recordings in his case as well. How would Aaron know ahead of time that a trial has been postponed unless... That was, if a trial is postponed and this is done right. A notice is supposed to go out to everyone.
Right.
I don't know if a notice went out to everyone.
No.
If it did, then everything's fine. But if it only went out to Aaron, then that's a problem.
Well, yeah, and I'll tell you, another interesting thing is, after I started digging into this a little bit more, I went into CaseNet, and Commissioner McKee was absolutely horrible. As a matter of fact, everyone knows that if you went to her courtroom, you were automatically getting a GAL, and that GAL's job was to settle the case. Because McKee, being a commissioner, she, even more so than most judges, she definitely didn't want her cases overturned by the appellate court, because you know, she's a commissioner. She doesn't even, she acts as a judge, but she is not a judge. A judge needs to sign off on her orders.
Commissioner is a junior judge. I guess it depends on what you mean by the definition of it, is whether or not she's a judge. She's not a full judge, though. They often, and in some jurisdictions, they're called magistrates. I've heard them called referees. This is all variation for a term for a junior judge. I seen United a story out of Utah, and it was a junior judge. They called her a commissioner, and she had an enormous amount of power over a case. And one thing I wanted to say about these settlements, I think in a perfect world, everyone should try and settle them. The problem is, number one, there are certain types of people in this world, people will throw out terms like narcissist. I think you have to have a certain background in education before you can use a term like that. But toxic people, you can't settle with them. Or the settlement is they get everything, you get nothing, or worse than nothing. The problem with people who demand settlements is you can't. Both parties need to want to settle and want to try to settle fairly before you can have a settlement. So when someone like Medler comes in and it's like, we need to settle, well, it's all good and well if there are parties who are trying to settle, but if there's a party that thrives on this stuff, and there are people like that, or they will not take any kind of settlement besides one that's completely favorable to them, and you try to hoist the settlement on people, that's not going to work out. It'll work out for one party, and it won't work out for the other party, and that's the problem. There are certain cases where you can settle, and I do encourage people to try to, you should definitely try to settle, but you can't settle for the sake of settling.
Right.
If your ex is like, well, I'm getting 100% and you pay me $4,000 a month in child support and it's non-negotiable, what are you supposed to do? Are you supposed to, we need to settle, so I guess I should take it?
Yeah.
And this is, what's Medler will probably say, sure, yeah, no, you need to settle.
Well, yeah, and here's a perfect example. I'll take us to the next recording that I have. Brian Dunlap was representing me at the time when we called my current wife and we were having a discussion.
Dunlap is also a very notorious guardian ad litem.
Oh, yeah.
Most of these folks who are guardian ad litem are actually lawyers. So not in every case, but often in many cases, they're guardian ad litem in one case, and then in another one, they're a lawyer representing one party or the other. And Elaine Podlowski is like that. I believe Medler was like that before he became a judge. So this guy Dunlap was representing you in this case. He's also a very notorious guardian ad litem in other cases.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But I want to play this recording because I got Brian Dunlap in this recording stating that Jeff Medler, it was his decision to put this plan together and that it was not negotiable. So just because you're forced into a settlement, there's oftentimes you're not able to negotiate. So let me play that real quick for you. Give me one second here. Just one brief second.
They got divorced. I mean, there have been way too many, motions and court hearings and behavior up and down by both sides. There has, no doubt. And right now, Nate's behind the eight ball with that depth.
Okay, so is there any compromise on her side? What is it?
No, this would end it. We do this.
There is a.
this is what Jeff Medler's put forth.
Jeff is the judge and jury on this, and this is what he wants, and that's what's going to happen. And if we try it, then I'm going to lose. I mean, I've already lost.
Okay, hold on here.
Okay.
So go ahead. What were you saying, Brian?
So Candace wants
it. Okay. So you heard it yourself, Jeff Medler. That's what he wants. There's no compromise.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's the way a lot of these cases end. I mean, it's not a settlement. It's because you are forced into settling. Otherwise, you got to pay another, you know, on top of the 30, 40, 50 grand, whatever the number is, another.
There's also another problem. You know, if Medler is demanding you settle and one party is like, sure, and the other party isn't, well, then if there's no settlement, it's going to be even worse for the party that's not settling.
Right.
So, you know, these are coerced settlements, and that's not the way this goes. As I said, settlement, you always should try to settle. You should always try, should never give up trying to settle. But if you're working with someone who's toxic, that's a term I can use, the chances of a good settlement are very slim. And in this case where he's like, this is what you're settling on, that's not a settlement. That's a guy hoisting a like a decision on you. Look, that's no different than a judge, you know, than two parties going into court, having a trial, and the judge saying, this is what you're going to do.
Right.
How is that different? Except Medler wasn't, at the time, a judge. That's the difference, is this guy's not allowed to do what he's actually doing.
Right. Well, I got, you know, the other thing is, too, I got another recording of Eric Tunsil, who represented me, and he even said that McKee is known for putting everything on the, you know, McKee, with all the attorneys in the family court system in St. Louis County, was always known for putting everything on the, letting the GAL decide the case. Like, there was even one time during the second school move of my son. We did a TRO to try to keep him at the school, and McKee goes, well, I can't make a decision on this. We're going to have Bill Grant do it, because Bill Grant was the GAL at the time. And I asked my attorney, I said, how can she not make a call on that? Her whole job, she is the judge. Her whole job is to make the call. So.
Right. Like, that's a lot of times these judges put in a guardian ad litem so they don't have to make a decision. They can pawn it off on the guardian ad litem and they can say, I was just following the guardian ad litem's recommendation. Yeah, you know, it's funny. No one's forced to be a judge. It's a coveted position.
Right.
And then you become a judge and you don't want to do your job. You know, it's amazing. It really is.
Yeah.
You know, being a judge is coveted. And then you become a judge and then, oh, God, you know, I got to make all these difficult decisions. Yeah, you do.
Yeah, yeah.
And well, no one forced you into this position.
Right. And, you know, the reason why I think a lot of the, you know, and I don't want to say all, but a lot of these judges want to force the settlement is because, again, they don't want to be overturned at the appeal court.
This gets a little bit technical. We're getting into a gray area.
Yeah.
It's a little bit of legal analysis. The settlement, it's next to impossible to appeal because you've said told. It's not a decision or an order by a judge. There is still a little bit of wiggle room if there was fraud, if you were coerced, you know, if someone sends you an email and says, you know, you better take this or I'm going to make sure you never see your kids, you could theoretically appeal that.
But you got to be able to prove it, and without recordings or, you know, jury or whatever.
For all intents and purposes, a settlement cannot be appealed, and that's why they want these settlements, because they don't want to be appealed.
Right. Well, and plus, if you get too many appeals, you might get kicked off, and then you lose your pension. And that pension for these judges are very, very lucrative. I mean, it is
Right. And one of the more notorious judges in America, her name is Lewis Young. And the way that she was discovered was that her decisions were overturned on appeal at a level. It was like five times the next highest person, who was pretty high themselves in terms of the number of appeals overturned. So you wind up being notorious if you're appealed enough. If that's, you know, people need to put two and two together. Just because you're appealed, no one necessarily knows that you're appealed or overturned a lot. But that's what happened to Lyris Young. She's out of Pennsylvania.
Okay.
And I think she might still be a judge, but she was definitely, she was removed from family court. She, you know, a lot of stuff was written about her. And I know she got in trouble with the oversight board, but that's, you know, that's one way that bad judges are exposed. Look, that's what partially what the appeals process is for, is to expose these bad judges.
Right. Now, a couple other things. I want to get back to Medler because that's really what the focus is on this one. You know, Medler supported my ex. Now, if someone were to ask him how he came to that conclusion, I don't know that he could prove it, or he could justify what he, you know, him supporting her, because believe it or not, my ex has a felony, and as it turns out, she actually has two felonies. We just found another one not too long ago. And so you're Medler, sorry about that. Medler supported her, someone who can't even vote or own a firearm, who's lost that privilege. Now she retained sole legal. He gave her sole legal, and mm-hmm. she can't even make a decision for herself. How can he even, you know?
And she moves your son
right
about every year on top of it. So she's a felon, moves your son yearly. And look, it's not just Medler. We're focusing on Medler. This is the theme of this particular program. But in your case, there were a lot of people involved in this decision.
Right.
And all of them, none of them cared. And so you got to ask yourself why. I don't think all of these people are that incompetent. This is a setup.
Right. Exactly. And, you know, the other thing about it is also, my ex, you know, she had made so many DSS, Department of Social Services, calls that, first of all, after, you know, one or two or something like that, it's like a Class D felony, and then it goes to a Class C or something like that. I can't remember the correct terms. But, you know, my ex made so many DSS calls that DSS stopped coming out. They're like, you're crazy. We're not doing that. And Medler still supported her. But what's really frustrating is I put one of those DSS...
That's very significant.
Yeah.
You know, if you're supposed to lose a lot of custody time if you're doing that, I've absolutely seen in objective courts that
he actually gave
you calling DSS a lot. That's very bad, because it's not only the stress on your ex that you're creating, it's the stress on the child that you're
right.
creating.
Because they got to be interviewed.
Right, and you're asking them to falsely accuse the other parent of bad things. That moving the kid around is pretty bad. This second, she's got a felony on her record. Look, this is a pattern. Does this need to be spelled out to them? Your ex is a criminal. Who jumps at the chance to hook up with a guy and moves wherever that guy is at, and then she likes to call DSS. Look, that's a tactic. It's an insidious one, and you're supposed to be held accountable for that. It's a really, I can't tell you how bad a thing it is to constantly call CPS with frivolous complaints, or the police, both.
Well,
In an objective court, when that's presented as evidence, it's not ignored. If this was ignored, that's not an objective court.
Well, Michael, let me put this in perspective for you. I had a report against me in 2017, and I put this in front of Medler. My ex, so my son, he lost two teeth. You know, he was, I don't know, six at the time or seven, whatever, and he lost his two front teeth. During my custody, we had 1 week on, 1 week off, and my ex took an opportunity to call the police and DSS, and of course it was all proved unsubstantiated, and the police didn't even interview me. But she tried to say that I punched my son in the face and knocked his two front teeth out. And Mettler completely ignored that, too. I mean, as a parent, whether it's a father or a mother, do you know how disheartening that is to have being accused of something like that? I mean, it's horrible. And Mettler, again, the child peddler Mettler, he just lets it happen. Just let it happen. Ignored it.
Right, like they were ignoring an awful lot of things in your case, which tells me that's a setup. Yeah, and look, I've had the same kind of thing happen to me in my custody case, and being falsely accused of stuff like that is very difficult. And my ex was held accountable because I wound up in a much more objective court than you were.
Not good. Well, I'm glad she was held accountable. She should be.
Right. Correct. And as I said, look, any objective judge who, you know, you called DSS 8 times, they're all unfounded. Of course they're supposed to view that significantly. Of course. How else are you supposed to view that? Someone who's willing to consistently call DSS with frivolous complaints? That's a very bad thing. That's not someone who should be anywhere near that child. And the reason they shouldn't be anywhere near that child is because once they're near that child, that's what they're going to do. They're going to coach that child to say something bad about the other parent and call DSS again.
Right.
Look, it's like a drug. It's, you know, if someone calls DSS consistently, it's essentially the same thing as shooting up every day.
Yeah.
It's like you can't help yourself. So of course.
Yeah. It's that sense of enjoyment that the ex gets out of doing that.
Anywhere near a child with that. Well, what do you think is going to happen? They're going to try to coach them into a false allegation. You know how bad that is for a child? And that's for Mettler. That's fine for Mettler. I think you had Zellweger at one point.
I did not have Zellweger, but I know who she is. No doubt about that.
You may not have. It's fine for it's fine for everyone who was involved in this case.
Yeah. I mean, McKee was fine with it. Mettler was fine with it. Dunlop was fine with it. And, of course, Zelensky is always fine with it. But, you know, the other thing about this, too, Michael, is when those false DSS reports and police reports are made, you know, it's costing the taxpayers. I mean, that's their tax dollars being put to bad use. And also it's taken away from kids and people who do need those services.
Right, and it also makes it more difficult on those with non-false allegations. That's another thing that everybody always brings up, and it's true. The false allegations make people skeptical of all allegations, including the real ones. These false allegations, they're just deleterious to the system. And people need to be held accountable. You know, the problem is you don't want to discourage people from calling CPS, from calling the police when they believe a crime has been committed, when they believe their child is being abused. And if the penalties are too harsh, then people are going to be scared to call the police and CPS, even when it's a real allegation, for fear that, oh, it's not going to be found, and now I'm going to be the one held accountable. But that said, you're not talking about one or two calls. You're talking about a consistent stream of calls. And at some point, it should become obvious to people that this is someone who is weaponizing CPS. And there's almost nothing worse than weaponizing CPS.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, the other thing is also with Mettler is not only did he not check into anything or follow up on anything. You know, he let Aaron Zelensky bring in a frivolous DSS report, and it got included in our parenting plan. And that parenting plan, believe it or not, in St. Louis County, the general public can access that. And that parenting plan and frivolous DSS report that Aaron Zelensky provided had my son's name in there. And so what ended up happening is we had to file a post-trial motion, and McKee had to have Judge Reno raise it to a level 5 security because they didn't want to do the time to do the paperwork to take it out. So they just, you know, concealed it. But, you know, that cost me about another $3,000. So I not only did I pay you know, I'm just going to round it up to, it was 16.8 in fees, but let's just say 17 grand to Jeff Medler. Well, you know, I had to pay another $3,000 to wipe up his mistakes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know? The amount of money that this costs the parents, it's obscene. And, you know, that's probably not even just the beginning of your son's college fund. That could be the entire college fund. But certainly, if you took that money and put that into an account for your son's college, that would probably pay for it. The amount of money you spent on all of these court actors, all of this court stuff, and I can't emphasize this enough. They're all claiming to do this for your son's benefit, for his best interest. Medler is charging you $17,000. It's in your son's best interest. All this court process is in your son's best interest. They've taken away what could have been your son's college fund. And if you still got his college fund, it could have been for something else. And you know what? Even if you've still got plenty of money for you and your son, that was your money. And there's absolutely no reason for all of these people to be able to charge you. And it's coerced. Yeah. None of this you agreed to. None, zero.
And now we gotta, every time he walks into the courtroom, we gotta stand up for this guy because they call him honorable. It's just disgusting. As a matter of fact, actually, I'll tell you how honorable Medler is. I got this other recording. You should listen to what he was on a case. He talks about a case in St. Louis City, because they're St. Louis County and St. Louis City. They're two different municipalities. But listen to what he says about this one mom. I'll play the recording here real quick. She's a psycho bitch. That's what he says.
Right. Okay.
I mean, he talks about, actually, I got the whole recording, but instead of just playing it, what happened is he comes in with me and Jeff, or Brian Dunlap. Medler comes in, and he's talking about a case that he had down in St. Louis City. And he talks about how the mom kept on making DSS call, DSS call, DSS call, you know, just continued on. And, you know, he said that finally, you know, they told the dad that, you know, the next time it happens, take her back to court, because, of course, you know, they can't get it right the first time. So you got to come back to court. And he said they finally ended up flipping custody to the dad. But, you know, during that time, he calls this woman a crazy bitch. I mean, you know, in my opinion, when you're calling a mom that, I'm going to play it again just so you can hear it again.
Mm-hmm.
He's a psycho bitch.
So
Medler, I don't think he was on the Zoom conference call, though I don't think they referred to him. But it was Art Nissenbaum who made the, I would call the notorious, you know, a lot of these people have these mental disorders. That's why they're after us. People like Medler, they do have contempt for you and others, for the parents who are in this divorce, but they have a not a legal contempt, like a psychological contempt. They look down on you. Mm-hmm. They are better than you in their minds. That, you know, you're messed up, and they're not. And that's how they justify everything they do in their minds.
Right. And so, well, it's part of them. You know, I tell people a lot of these GALs and even some of these judges are narcissists. I mean, they think that they're so right that even when they make a mistake, they find a way to cover it up or turn away. You know, not trying to fix it, but cover it up or ignore it. And that's you just can't. You know, you can't have people like that doing that. And that here's the other problem. They have so much power that they make the sole decision. I mean, if you or I committed murder, we would actually get a jury, and 8 people would have to agree on it.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
12.
Okay,
that's
yeah.
Correct. Yeah, they, but there are also given this kind of enormous power by the judge, and not only by being appointed, but as I said, because these judges, they like to bring the guardian ad litem in to make the decisions the judge doesn't want to make. The guardian ad litem is supposed to be advising the judge, but the ultimate decider is always supposed to be the judge. And The court orders have the judge's signatures on them, but you'd just be surprised by how little input these judges actually often have into the final court order that their names are on. Mm-hmm. So, but the power that you are talking about, one thing people should understand, it's granted to them in a ubiquitous way by the judges who appoint them, first by appointing them, but more by giving them a lot more power than they necessarily are supposed to have by judges ceding their own power. Judges are either appointed through the executive and legislative branch, or they are elected directly by the people. And so they are answerable directly to you. It's not a perfect system anyway, but it's a lot different than these guardian ad litem who are appointed by the judges. They're completely bureaucrats. The way this is working is not the way it's supposed to work.
No, it's completely broken, especially in St. Louis County. I mean, it's just, in Missouri, because now, as you know, we sent emails to people within the governor's office when Medler was, because you were on those emails, stating that Medler is just, one of the ones that should not be on the bench. And they still put him on there anyway. So now the only way to get him off, which, he was just reelected last year, but, come 2026, when he's up for reelection again, I want to have a big campaign to try to get him off the bench, because people like him should not be on there. Same way with Zellweger, and there's a couple others in that court,
right now, in St. Louis County and a handful of others, they have a very jacked up system. In most of the state of Missouri, there's a direct election, which isn't, as I said, isn't that great in itself. But the way they do it in St. Louis County and a handful of other counties is there's like a board that takes nominations, and then that board chooses three, and then they send those three to the governor, and the governor chooses from the three. The problem is, often the three who are chosen, none of them are great. But look, in a direct election, if you have two terrible candidates, it's the same kind of deal. So elections are better, but they don't think it's a panacea. There's a great book called When Corruption Was King, which is about it was written by a guy named Robert Cooley, who was a fixer for the Outfit, which is the mafia in Chicago. And the Outfit controlled the judges because they could get out the vote.
Gotcha.
So, direct elections sound great until you learn that the mafia has figured out how to fix them.
Yeah.
So that's no longer the case, by the way. It's because of Cooley that it's no longer the case. But still, there was a time in Cook County, where I live, where the mafia was the one picking judges because they could get out the vote.
Yeah, I've seen documentaries on that. I know you're up there in Chicago, and that was a big...
Right, and they've interviewed Cooley, who might still be alive. Okay, so do you have any more...
one last thing, because I know we're coming up to the end here. One interesting thing I found with Medler is that, sometimes this continues to play, but... one thing that was interesting when I first met Medler and our initial meet was, and this has always been a thing with the GALs here in St. Louis County, they all seem to have their own psychiatrist to give evaluations. And, I was telling Medler, I was like, I think there's something wrong with my ex. Here's why, blah, blah, blah. All the DSS calls accusing me of this and that. And that's when he brought up Susan Sanderson. He brought up Richard Scott also, but he said that he uses Susan Sanderson a lot. Mm-hmm. And so during our time in August of 2018, the judge made us both get a psych eval, and of course Medler made the decision to use Susan Sanderson. I mean, it ended up not being much of anything, but still, these mm-hmm. GALs have their own preferred list of, mm-hmm. psychiatrist, mm-hmm. or, also like in my case, when we were forced into a settlement, we were forced to get a PC, and it came down to Judge Beach. That's who Medler wanted. So, they got their own preferred list. It's, you don't even get an opportunity to really, choose. I mean, mm-hmm. You know, even Susan Sanderson at one time was under a lawsuit. Mm-hmm. Just like, what was his name? Reed? Was it James Reed?
James Reed, yep.
Yeah.
Another notorious figure.
Yeah. So, well, Michael, I know we're coming to that time. I really appreciate everything. But, you know, keep up the good work out there. I mean, you've done a lot. I'm glad to hear things are going well with you and your son, Jack. I mean, that's a big one for you to be able to, you know, get custody and get him out of your ex's poison, you know, and live a healthy life. So.
All right. Well, I appreciate that. Thanks for having me.
No problem. All right. Thanks, Michael. Hold on one second. I'm going to stop this.